WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. We begin today with a debate America is not having around Chuck Hagel's nomination to be Secretary of Defense. At Hagel's contentious confirmation hearing on Thursday, as far as I can tell, not one senator asked Hagel about the use of unmanned military drones. I did a Google search and nothing came up relative to the hearings. But as Time magazine reports in its cover story this week, the fleet has gone from 50 drones to 7,500 drones in the last 10 years. On President Obama's watch, there have been 300 drone strikes inside Pakistan alone, a country with which the United States is not at war, with hundreds of civilians killed there, raising both legal and ethical questions. But at Hagel's all-day hearing, it never came up. The outgoing defense secretary, Leon Panetta, was asked about drones yesterday on Meet the Press.
You know, as a Catholic, I remember when I first became director of the CIA and realized that I was making life and death decisions with regards to our operations. It doesn't come lightly. You've got to really think about it. You've got to make sure that we really are focused on somebody who is, who is a direct threat to the United States. Someone who intends to attack the United States and hurt our people. And you've got to be able to go through the process. And it was an intricate process, not only of establishing the targets, but going through the legal requirements to ensure that we were doing this carefully. And then also then the operational side to make sure that we limited the collateral.
We can take your word.
Outgoing Defense Secretary Leon Panetta. Lev Grossman wrote the fascinating Time magazine cover story, which suggests that drones are about to transform peace as they've transformed war, and that you, too, may soon buy your very own personal drone. Lev, thanks very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
In past wars, including Vietnam, drones were used for surveillance. You write that the modern drone era really began on the very first night of the Afghanistan war in 2001. What happened that night?
Well, that was the first time the world saw an armed predator strike, or really an armed strike from an unmanned vehicle of any kind. They had been sort of tinkering with the predator since, I think, 95. Was the first flight. But that was the first time they successfully, whacked a missile launching system onto one. They at that point had GPS, so the Predator knew where it was. And they tried it, and boy, was it effective.
And since then, you write that drone technology has been advancing faster than our ability to understand how to legally and ethically use it. Can you talk about the technology first? What's changing so quickly with drones?
Well, a lot of it has to do with miniaturization, getting a lot of intelligence on board those vehicles. So your chips, as they tend to do, getting smaller and faster. But it's also sensor technology getting smaller, and GPS getting more sophisticated, weapon systems getting more sophisticated. This is something, technology tends to evolve very rapidly when we focus this much effort and these colossal amounts of money on it. And that's what's happening with drones.
How small are these drones? Are they like blimps? Are they like mosquitoes? How small?
Well, the funny thing about drones is that, we have this image in our mind of the Predator or the Reaper drones. But drones are, as I put it in the piece, becoming very biodiverse. So at the small end, you're getting drones the size of a hummingbird. And then the top end, you're getting massive vehicles like the what's called the LEMVI, which is a 300-foot-long blimp, which is designed to just sort of squat above a battlefield or other area that requires surveillance for 3 weeks at a time.
Al Gore tweeted on Friday that the Pentagon now trains more pilots to fly unmanned drones than pilots to fly actual military aircraft. Do you know that to be true?
That is a well-known factoid, and as far as my research can tell, it is in fact true. There's an enormous demand for drone pilots, to the point where you're getting drone piloting being outsourced to sort of consulting firms that the military hires to put people in chairs to fly these things.
Civilians?
Civilians, yes. As far as I know, yes, they are civilians.
Launching military strikes.
Now, these would be surveillance. Surveillance people. You're not going to have people, I think, pulling the trigger who are not military people.
And you're right that strictly by the numbers, military drones have been a spectacular success, but have led the nation into a labyrinth of confusion and moral compromise. What are some of the numbers that add up to success? You want to go there? Because they're very interesting in your piece. Do you want to cite a few favorites?
Yeah, sure. The ultimate test, of course, is how many high-value Al-Qaeda and Taliban people actually effectively taking out. And part of the problem here is a lot of the drone strikes are carried out by the CIA, which means they are covert, which means that we have no idea how effective they are because no one admits that we're doing them. And they often take place in remote areas where journalists don't have good access.
And so some of the things you cite here, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, a UK nonprofit, estimates that since 2004, CIA drone strike attacks have killed 2,600 to 3,400 people in Pakistan alone, of whom 475 to 891 were civilians. The New America Foundation puts those numbers somewhat lower, at more like 260 to 300 civilians. The CIA, you note, declined to comment for the story. And you'd think with all that, there would be at least one question about drones at the Senate confirmation hearing for the new defense secretary. Were you surprised no one even raised the topic?
I'm incredibly surprised. I'm somewhat surprised. Drones, are a very seductive technology. They promise very simple solutions to problems. They're very cheap. They sort of gather their own intelligence. They're relatively precise. They solve a lot of problems. You just throw them over there. There's no risk to any human pilots. So I feel like people don't want to sort of mess with a good thing, and they know that there's some bad stuff going down, but we don't know how bad. So we just sort of shovel dirt over it and let it keep going on rather than really digging into it and trying to figure out what are we as a nation doing. Is this in any way moral or ethical? Is it even legal under international law or under domestic law?
It also didn't come up in the presidential campaign between Obama and Romney, but you mentioned international law. The UN, as you probably know, is now studying the legal limits of military drone strikes, and the U.S. refuses to have this discussion domestically. I think we're going to wind up having to have it internationally. Here is the former commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, General Stanley McChrystal. He was on this program just a few weeks ago. And honestly, Lev, I was surprised how forthcoming he was on the moral and strategic dilemma that drones pose.
I think they are much more controversial than many Americans realize. They are a key tool for reconnaissance and strike for America, and I'm a big supporter of them. But we need to understand modern wars are not like World War II, where we crush our enemy and then we have rebuild. Wars are won in the minds of people. They decide who the victor and the loser is. And so every time we conduct an operation of any kind, how it's perceived by people, whether it's people near the strike or far away, is really key. We need to look at the reaction in places like Pakistan, the incredible concern that the Pakistani population has over violations of sovereignty and whatnot. And we need to weigh every action we take, like drone strikes, against the cost, because each has a value and each has a cost.
Are you surprised? And that was General Stanley McChrystal on this program a few weeks ago. And my guest is Lev Grossman, who has a fascinating cover story in Time about drones this week. Are you surprised to hear General McChrystal so circumspect about the use of drones?
I'm pleasantly surprised. His analysis seems trenchant and accurate. There are parts of the world where that's what America looks like to them. America looks like a flying robot that is constantly crisscrossing the skies above them, and there's no way of telling when it's going to strike.
We have Jake Tapper coming on from CNN shortly to talk more about Hegel, but I should mention that your article is as much about the civilian and even personal use of drones by Americans as about the military uses. What's the range of uses that you see coming down the pike for drones?
Well, it's pretty diverse. I mean, anywhere where it would be useful to have eyes and potentially other sorts of senses in the sky, you're going to see drones being adapted to them. So, you know, the MPAA, the Hollywood Filmmaking Organization, is lobbying the government to allow them to shoot movies using drones. Farmers are going to use them to observe, to check crops. Power companies are going to use them to check power lines. Real estate agents are quite fond of flying drones over their properties that they're trying to sell to make exciting videos. And of course, this is probably where we've gotten furthest in actual reality, police departments like to use them for domestic law enforcement.
Your article begins with you borrowing a drone, a toy, really, that sells for only $300. What kind of drone was that?
That was a drone. It's called the AR Drone 2.0, but I call it the Parrot because it's made by a company called Parrot. And it's a real marvel. This thing has it's studded with sensors. You fly it using your iPhone. What interests me about drones, or one of the things, is that they are essentially low end technology at this point. They're consumer technology. They're off the shelf technology. They are very similar in some ways to what computers were in the 70s. People are tinkering with them like crazy. And anybody who wants to invest a little money can get their hands on them. So I think what we're going to see is drones evolving over here as well very fast, and people doing things with them that we haven't quite yet anticipated.
And again, you say drones are a radically new technology that can expand our body like the internet expands your mind. What are some of the things that personal drones? You mentioned just now some of the industries that might use drones, like law enforcement and farming and construction. How about individual use of drones?
Well, what I'm looking forward to is the first time I go to an elementary school soccer game, and you've got a dad on the sidelines, or a mom, flying a drone overhead, trying to catch that sort of sports center style swooping action highlight. What I'm really looking forward to is the two dads who have the drones both flying over the soccer field and trying to avoid each other desperately.
So how small and quiet can those personal drones be?
At this point, not that small and not that quiet. Basically, you have drones that are, you know, miniature helicopters. The Parrot is probably 2 feet across and quite noisy. You know, these things, they're flying with regular rotors like a helicopter, so they put out a lot of noise. But, you know, again, drones are something that we're going to see evolve real fast. People are very interested in them. A lot of money goes into them. And technologies like that, they don't stay still. People put pressure on them, and they change and they improve.
I'm thinking a lot about the NRA these days. So I wonder, do you think we'll see personal drones that can fire on home invaders or school shooters or be used for aerial deer hunting or otherwise be defended as your next Second Amendment right?
I haven't quite given up on humanity yet, so the idea of a weaponized civilian drone in this country is something that I feel confident that we're not going to see for a long time. Although it's a good parallel, you know, gun control and drones. Both of this is our attempt to control a technology, to keep it from evolving, to keep it in certain places but not other places. And those attempts are always met with mixed success.
We have a drone strike sentiment map, folks, on our website. We ask two questions plotted on an X and Y axis. Do they help our image in the world? And are they effective as a national security tool? So, listeners, you can go and plot your point on that graph at WNYC.org click on Brian Lehrer Show. You know, Lev, that you're on a wonky radio station when we have an X and Y axis for people to go and register their opinions on. But that's what it is. It's a drone strike sentiment map on our webpage. Do they help our image in the world, and are they effective as a national security tool? Go and plot your point on that graph. We started this one in the fall when this was one of the issues in our presidential election series, 30 issues in 30 days, but we'll keep building the sentiment map today at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And, you know, there's so much skepticism about drones. There is a moral case to be made for them, and I wonder how strongly you've heard people articulate this. When you talk about big ground wars in defense of U.S. national security, like we're getting out of now in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, in Iraq, there were 100,000 civilian deaths, at least, according to most of the reliable estimates. I don't know how many in Afghanistan, but from these major, major wars. So if one decides that it's a legitimate thing to go and try to kill, top-level high-value al-Qaeda operatives, and there are some number of civilian casualties along the way, then one could argue that as wars go and as methods of wars go, this is actually relatively good on the moral scale, despite those civilian deaths. There are people who make that case, right?
Yes, that calculus can definitely be performed, no question. I think what people are really hungry for at this point is two things. One is transparency. We need to get the stuff above board, and I think even Brennan is interested in making this happen. We need to
CIA director.
Yes, right. We need to make clear, you know, how we decide who gets struck by a drone and who doesn't. And we need to admit that we're doing it. We need to take responsibility for what we're doing overseas rather than just sort of sitting there and looking the other way. And I think we also need an international legal framework, which with the UN is currently in their slow but determined way trying to set up. We need to decide, well, what exactly is the sort of legal framework for understanding what we're doing? Are we at war? If we send a robot into a country that we're not in a declared war with, we're in a kind of abstract war with terrorism. We send the robot in, we kill some people, we don't say, there's no due process, there's no explaining why we think these people are a threat to us. Are we committing a war crime or not? I think we need transparency, and I think we also need that kind of legal clarity, just a way to understand what we're doing.
Lev Grossman, his cover story about drones is in the New Time magazine. Lev, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Jake Tapper next, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.